I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Sorry, before we start the podcast, if you're a regular listener and you're enjoying the content, please, please, please consider subscribing and leaving us a review on whatever platform you're listening to this on. These really help us to keep going with the content, and it'll cost you absolutely nothing and just help us to get seen by more people. So welcome to the next episode of the Get In Our Home series. This is the series designed to help home builders, homeowners and renovators to get inspiration and guidance from industry professionals, but also homeowners themselves. My name is Peter Kilmartin, and in this episode we travel to County Galway to meet Cyril from Mannion Build Construction Company. This is another episode, a part of our professional series, where we talk to industry professionals about their area of expertise and we ask all the common questions so you don't have to. Following on from our previous professionals episode, which gathered a huge amount of interest, we spoke to Cyril about all things passive construction. We discussed the passive build concept, pros and cons, and lots more. Cyril's been in the game a long time, and he's just a real straight talker, which I'm sure you guys will really appreciate. Don't forget, you can also see Cyril and all the other homes we filmed with on the Get In Our Home YouTube channel. So I started by asking Cyril to give us an intro into who he is, and oh, PS, we filmed this on a windy day, so I do apologize if there's a small bit of wind noise. Okay, let's jump into it.
Mannion Build is the name of the business, and Cyril Mannion is my name and director. We're a small outfit, but we're into low energy and passive house. We're around it over 15 years, and how we got into it was through an SEI scheme back in 2007 or 8, which was called House of Tomorrow. So that project was to build a house up to an A3 rating. When there was no A rating at all at the time, there was no BER. Even the deep software was in its infancy. It wasn't even difficult to get guys to do a calculation.
Yeah, yeah.
And I ended up going off and getting to know how to use deep. And we built the A3 rated houses. The natural progression of that was to get on to passive house. It was the next step up at the time, because passive house was actually 40% more efficient at the time than current regulations. And I ended up going to Germany and investigating products and companies and looked at different things.
The Germans were way ahead of their time.
Yeah, not them all, but yeah, they were at it. Like, it is a German standard and it's around a long time, 30 odd years. But they have, some companies have, and you would be surprised, some Germans don't know nothing about house. Yeah. But long story short, I ended up in Strathclyde on the first English-speaking course in passive house planning package, which is the design software. And that was with a bunch of architects and one builder, yours truly. So we went on to build passive house. Then we built in timber frame, and we built with block and external insulation and wide cavity. And we've done them in Limerick, Galway, Dublin. So they're all bespoke projects, all certified by the Germans, independently certified, and had their BERs done. And funny enough, they're all A3 rated.
And is it all passive building that you're doing now, Cyril, or are you still doing traditional build methods too?
Peter, the regulation has caught up so much that passive house isn't the holy grail that it was. It's still better than current regulation in terms of comfort and thermal bridge and air tightness. And especially overheating. Overheating is taken into fact big time in passive house, whereas deep hasn't got a facility at the moment to assess overheating. But to answer your question, we're more general now. Like, we do small bit commercial and passive house and low energy house, I'd call your non-certified, but they essentially, a lot of them are very, very near passive.
Like, you know, for people listening or watching, can you just give a quick definition? What actually does a passive house mean? What does that mean?
Yeah, passive house is, it's, the house is designed to perform to passive house levels, and they being 15 kilowatts per meter square is the figure that's thrown around there, which in plain English is a litre and a half of oil per square meter,
right,
per year to heat that house, just heat. And that calculation is done in the software, and we're also at the point of diminishing returns. So we've calculated and we've insulated the building as much as economically possible without going OTT and wasting money.
Yeah.
So that's
and like, you know, when you hear of B or ratings and it goes like, you know, the C's, the B's, the A's.
Yes.
So passive is actually ahead of your A1 house. Is that correct?
No, not necessarily. The two different calculations. Your passive house planning package is a software. It's very simple. It's your heat gains and your heat losses added up, one subtracted from the other. That gets your heat load, and you're insulating to minimize that heat load. Whereas your DEEP is assessing all that, and it's looking at carbon.
Yeah.
Carbon emissions. So if you're heating your house with oil and an oil boiler, your BR rating is going to be maybe B1, A3. Whereas if you change that to a heat pump, it automatically comes into A2, A1 zone, because you're not, your carbon footprint is less, more efficient. Whereas passive house is looking at cutting your heating down completely.
That makes sense. I think it's interesting that people might be on the fence between, when they're building the house, like they're considering, like, you know, energy ratings and passive and stuff. How early in the build process should I be thinking about passive house?
Very, very, very early. Planning. A lot of people come to us with planning permission granted, and thereafter, some people have an easy journey, others have a difficult journey. And we say, your orientation is wrong. Your first thing is your orientation of your house. South face, if possible, glazing. It's not impossible to do a build facing another direction, even north facing, but south facing is where you'll build most economically, as in less insulation, less money. So that's the first thing. And a lot of the time we'd get plans in, fully granted for planning permission and everything, and it's quite possible, you can see from the site map, that you could have faced south, but it wasn't done.
Right, yeah.
And you're looking at changing windows, and then when you change window location, you have planning issues.
Yeah.
So
at the first step.
It's the first thing you need to write, top of the list.
Yeah.
And it's not that it's going to cost you any more money, it's just a different mindset.
Yeah.
Maybe even a different architect or engineer than what you had planned. But very, very early is the secret.
And like, for somebody now that's listening to this on the fence, what are the, I suppose, short term and the long term benefits of going with a passive house? Because obviously there's probably an initial cost that might be a little bit more than your standard build.
Yeah. Well, I don't think there's probably no short term benefits, to be honest, with anything. it's all a long game. It's a lifetime. Most people are looking at a 50-year life cycle of a house in the usage, for themselves anyway. So you're looking at your running costs over that time. Whereas I suppose a lot of people don't think like that. They just look at, we want to build this house, we want to build it as economically as possible.
Yeah.
And they're not looking at the life cycle, the life running costs of it. And wouldn't it be lovely to, when you have your mortgage paid, that you wouldn't have another mortgage or an oil bill, or electricity bill or whatever it may be. Whereas a passive house, the heating is so minimal, like you're talking maybe €100 for the year.
Wow.
Yeah, for just heating. Now, hot water, of course, is a separate calculation on it. But yeah, you need to look at the long game on it and calculate your costs out that way, your payback on your investment.
It's interesting, like, that when people talk about passive houses, that they associate it with this really high cost, but chances are that it probably will outweigh itself if you have that 50-year cycle in your head in terms of outweighing the cost of the initial investment.
Yeah. I haven't done the calculation in a while, but I know I used to know the figures off the top of my head.
Yeah.
But there was actually a return on passive houses about 6%.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was the same thing as having money, that extra 20,000, whatever you spend. It was like having it at the bank with a 20% interest return.
Wow. Are there, behind you there, you have ICF blocks. Are there preferred methods when it goes to building a passive house? You know, are there certain areas of the build method that are preferred? Or can the traditional, you know, say the traditional block build, can that still be made into a passive house?
Yes. Yeah, you can build it. I've often said you can build it with gold bars if you want, if you have enough of them to achieve the insulation new value you need in the wall. So yeah, you can build with blocks, timber frame, ICF, external insulation. It can all be done. Granted,
what's the, like, you as a builder, what's your preferred method?
Well, obviously we have ICF here behind us. We like it. ICF, it ticks an awful lot of boxes. It's fast. It's efficient. We have very, very minuscule waste in a project because any bit of material that's left over can be carried on to the next house. It's naturally airtight, near enough. You just have to seal around your windows and a few junctions, your roof to wall and that. But your wall is airtight. Your wall is cold bridge free. Lintel design is gone, which has become a problem in the last few years. Since new Euro codes have come in, lintels have just grown exponentially.
Yeah.
They're gone. It's as I said, it's airtight, it's soundproof, it's a concrete house.
Yeah.
It's 150 mil solid. It's a poured solid concrete house. Your blocks are 7.5 newton. We're using 30 newton concrete in the walls.
The only thing I've ever heard as a con for ICF,
yes.
You know what I'm going to say, is when the child is outside playing with the slither and he buries it against the wall.
Yeah.
And there's a big dent in the side of the house.
Yes.
What do you think of that?
It's no problem. It won't happen. Go to any school, especially the secondary schools that have been built in the last 10 years. You may not know it, but every single one of them are built with external insulation. And they are being whacked every day of the week and there's no marks in them. So if you want to see external insulation, go to your local secondary school, probably even primary school at this stage. Most of them are externally insulated, and it's not a problem.
No problem.
No problem.
It's nearly like a myth as you hear people talking about it.
It is, yeah.
Oh, the child is going, you know what I mean? It's a funny one.
Yeah.
In terms of actual construction, so whatever it is, you know, what does that mean if I'm going with a passive house? Is there a lot more attention to detail? You know, say if I'm a self-builder and I've decided to go the passive route,
mm-hmm.
You know, what should I be thinking about during the build process? You know, air tightness is obviously a huge one.
Mm.
What else should I be thinking about or talking to tradesmen about? I've heard stories of people putting up flip charts in the house to make sure that any puncture in the membrane is recorded.
Mm.
What else should self-builders be doing if they're going the passive route?
Well, airtightness is a big one, and airtightness starts the day you start digging. It's like we would always we would plan our services before we'd ever start the site, even though it's second nature. But for a self-build, you need to plan them services, talk to your plumber, your electrician, and try and get efficient runs on them and minimise runs and try and keep them together. And we would put underground as much as possible all them services and have them services come up through the floor.
Why do you do that?
Because rather than going through the building upper fabric, I prefer to see them come through the floor. They're encased in concrete and they're, you know, airtight at that stage. So you just get efficient with all that.
Is it possible for a self-builder to achieve a passive house standard?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. But there's a lot of planning to go into it. So I suppose they'd need some sort of a construction background or know somebody that has managed it with them. But yeah, it can be done. It's been done. everyone has their own little party piece, I suppose. And if you're time poor, maybe not, but yeah, can be done. Yeah.
What's your thoughts on, you know, those on the fence between going the self-build route as opposed to going with a builder? Like, obviously you're a builder, so not to get too biased about it, but, you know, is there a huge cost to be saved by going the self-build route, or do you think that the builder can actually outweigh certain costs that they mightn't have thought about?
Yeah, we have to make a living as well, so obviously we're going to be more expensive than doing it yourself. So I suppose it depends, what's your background? How much money can you earn doing your day's work? Are you willing to come home in the evening and do another day's work? And put value in all that, put value in your own time. If you're time rich, and you can take time out from your everyday job, by all means, go for it. Where a builder comes in, I suppose we take away all that risk, all that thinking at night, safety, insurance, all that's covered. You have a contract, we're bankrolling the job. So probably if it was looked at, a builder is good value, because like the margins in contracting are very, very low. It's actually a risky business, so therefore that's why we stay relatively small.
Yeah.
So you can control it all that way, but yeah, it depends on your own background and what you're willing to do.
Do you think that there's common mistakes made by people that self-build? You know, is there certain things that, not that you'd be seen, but like, you know, you might be driving past a site and go, oh, Jesus, or, you know, would there be any common things that you'd see people doing and say, whatever they do, don't do that?
Yeah, look, I'd always see something, not massive mistakes, but I think air tightness is one area that I see a lot of silly things being done. The wrong tapes used, too much tapes used, expensive tapes used. It could be done more efficient. We'd do it more efficient anyway. Sometimes you see the membrane on the wrong side of where it should be, and you get your warm space, cold space, and the membrane is put up in the wrong place altogether. HRV be another one too, ducts in cold space that they shouldn't be in, possibly could have been put in a hot space. Yeah, there's lots of little things, but look at, you have to break eggs to make a cake, and everybody makes mistakes. You'll probably never know about it.
There's a lot of talk about passive houses being too hot.
Mm.
Are they too hot? What does that mean?
Yes, overheating is a gigantic problem in current regulation even. Passive house will not be certified, passive house, not unless we can prove that it will not overheat. So overheating is taken...
Because you see these big windows and glass, and more glass.
Yeah.
And what happens when the sun hits the glass?
Yeah.
It's like a greenhouse.
It's a greenhouse, yeah. It's a big, big problem. So all that has to be shaded. So like passive house deals with all that at planning stage in the software. It's flashing away there saying you're overheating your days, and you can adjust your window size, make them smaller or shorter, or make your reveals deeper. You get a shading by keeping your head out. Maybe you have to put on a canopy over some of them, in them big ones you're talking about. There should be a veranda incorporated into it to kill that summer sun. So the trick is, Christmas Day, your sun is only about 20, 25 degrees in the horizon. And in today, July, August, your sun is about 70 degrees in the horizon. So it's very easy to keep it out at 70 with a canopy. And you can let it in Christmas Day, the day you want it. Mm. So shading has to be considered and isn't being considered enough. And there is an awful lot of buildings overheating at the moment.
And like, you know, would a passive house, would it be stuffy? You know, is it too airtight? Are you, is it like you're in an airplane? Is it that sort of stuffiness? What does it feel like to live in a passive house?
Well, unfortunately, I don't live in one. But
are you serious?
No.
Ah, Cyril, that's great.
The shoemaker's son has no shoes.
but I should have asked you that off camera before you asked that question.
There you go. No, I've visited plenty of them and talked to people, and I hear the same thing all the time. They all say they're unbelievably fresh There's recycled, the air is recycled every half an hour through the building, through the HRV system, the heat recovery system. So you've constant fresh air coming into the building at 18, 19 degrees. So there's no cold air coming through the building when you're ventilating. And they're always fresh, airy buildings.
And are you able to open a window? Is that a stupid question? Are you able to open a window in a passive house, or would that not purge the whole thing?
There's no problem opening a window. You can open them to purge if you want. What we'd call cross-ventilate, open a house at opposite, or a window at opposite end of the building and let the air through to purge through if needed to be. But as regards opening a window in a bathroom or whatever, no problem. In actual fact, I had a conversation with a woman one day. We were having tea in her house, which was passive, and she had a big sliding door, and it was 3 meters. It was open, and she said, "You know that this place never gets cold, even when that door is open." And I had to think about that. Why it didn't get cold? And what makes a building cold? When you've got leakage, and you open a window, you get suction pulling air through the building, and that cools the building. But when you have an airtight building and you open a door, nothing moves. So you just get there's no draft. You just get ambient air floating around. So she could sit there on a frosty morning, she said, with the door open, and she gets no draft behind her.
That's insane.
That is.
So you can interesting.
Yeah.
Are there any cons of a passive house design? Negatives?
The design itself is a big negative, I suppose.
In terms of its limits?
Well, maybe not limited, but if people don't plan properly, and maybe sometimes it does limit your design, as in we're always juggling the balls, design and budget and energy efficiency. And sometimes you'd say, well, look, if you take away this here, you stay on your passive house parameters and you keep on budget. But I think you have that in every building.
Yeah. But like you know, from a design perspective, can a passive house be any design, or is it limited? Do you know what I mean? Like, can you have angles and corners?
Absolutely.
And,
yes.
Know,
no problem.
It doesn't have to be a square box. Then.
Not at all. No. You can have anything you want. It can be circle if you want. Right. No problem. But as I said, it's all about the number, the money, and what's your budget, and you design within your budget, and that's your limitation.
Would you be concerned if somebody was going to self-build route? Would you could be concerned about the tradesmen that they might be getting? Can any tradesman work on a passive house? Or would you be kind of the frame of mind that you should be only working with people that are working with passive houses day in, day out? Do you know? Can the local plumber on the road that worked on my father's house 30 years ago, can he do my new passive house?
Yes, we have used them. Granted, it does take a little bit more management, and we'd have to...
What do you mean, management?
Well, we'd induct them a little bit and tell them what we're doing and what's the process, and 9.5 times out of 10, there's a buy-in, and they get it, and they'll ask, is it okay to drill a hole here, whatever, and, you know, I wouldn't see a problem with it, as long as you make them aware of what you're trying to do.
And, like, you know, what would you do as a self-builder? Would you literally sit down your trades or talk to your trades and say, listen, lads, this is the plan? Like, you know, say you as a builder now, you must have subcontractors working for you all the time.
Yes.
Would you give them the kind of lowdown as to the process before they'd even...
We would, yeah. We'd give it... I'd nearly give it every day.
Yeah.
Because we'd always have different trades coming in and out, and we'd brief them. And sometimes we'd bring a few trades together that need to cooperate together, and we'd bring them together for a 10-minute chat on what we're going to do. So we'd always, you have to always keep talking.
Be really conscious about air tightness and punctures.
Yeah.
That would probably be the biggest thing in terms of a trades perspective, is puncturing the...
It would, yeah. Everything else goes at a slower pace and you can control it.
Yeah.
But your air tightness, if something is punctured somewhere or there's a penetration done and you're not aware of it, that could lead to problems down the road.
Yeah.
So it's good to... I'd always say, look, there's no problem, just tell me.
Yeah.
You know, if you know about it, you can deal with it. If you don't know about it, you can't deal with
it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So. It's an interesting one. from a passive house design perspective, and you're a great man to ask this question to Cyril, as a builder, do I need to get an architect on board to help me design a passive house, or can my engineer facilitate a passive house design?
Architect is the design of the flow of the building and whatever, so he's a necessity. So your engineer, he's into structure. He may, in some cases, act as your architect as well.
Yeah.
But if he's not going to use the passive house planning package, mm-hmm. You have a problem. You need to engage with an energy consultant as well to run his plans through the model and see. And the two of them guys need to sit and talk and adjust things to suit.
Yeah, yeah. Like, from your perspective as a builder, you wouldn't necessarily need to be talking to somebody specific. You'd be happy enough to be chatting to an engineer in terms of a passive house design.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And are there specific engineers around the country that are doing passive houses, or is it kind of every Tom, Dick and Harry now? I assume 10 years ago when you came in, nobody was doing it.
Oh, it was difficult, yeah. You had to pick your men. It was difficult, yeah, to get, especially for insulated foundations. It was they didn't really know or want to know what you were talking about. So, but the younger engineers now have picked all that up, and there are still practices that don't. I won't say don't touch passive house, but they don't practice passive house. So,
yeah.
It's the same as everything else, isn't it? Like, you go to somebody to design a school and somebody to design a house. Every practice has their own.
I won't hold you too much longer, but I just want to talk a little bit about air tightness.
Yes.
And there's so much talk about air tightness now when they're building a house. It has to be crucial, and it's just like this black hole, basically.
Okay.
I know online, like, people talk about air tightness and it's like, the end of the world. If I'm a self builder and I'm not going with a builder, what should I be thinking about in terms of air tightness? Even if I'm not going to passive house design, how early should I be thinking about air tightness? What are the key areas that I should be thinking about? And, what can I do as a self-builder to protect my air tightness quality of the house?
Yeah, as we said, air tightness starts day one. It's not something you start at the end of the project.
Yeah, and sorry, even before that, what does air tightness mean? What does that mean?
Okay, so you're controlling the leakage in the building. So I suppose in simple terms, you wouldn't walk down the road with a jacket with holes in it on a windy day, or any day probably. And in the same way, you wouldn't build a house and have holes, leakage in it. So during the build, you're watching all your external envelope, your walls, your floors, your ceilings, around your windows, and they're all sealed up as good as you can. And in passive house, you have to get it down to 0.6 air changes of the volume of the building. So that's your floor area by your height is your volume. And 0.6 of that is your air leakage that you're allowed, which is very little. It's difficult enough to achieve for a newbie, we'll say.
Yeah.
I know our first stab at it was in 2007, and we got 2 air changes in our first attempt after spending days sealing up. Our next attempt, we got to 1 air change, and third attempt, we were at 0.6.
Wow.
And we got to 0.6 the third time with less material and less time. So it's
experience.
Experience. It is a skill.
Yeah.
And you develop an eye and a nose and an ear for all them areas. So it's second nature to us.
Yeah.
I suppose somebody that hasn't built a house before, that could be a little bit, probably need to get in a bit of expertise in that to have a look over things, especially before you close up plasterboard, all that crack. Planning service cavity services, your plumbing and your electrical, all of them need to be kept inside your airtight layer. So that needs to be planned out a little bit as well. And that actually goes back to your construction. When you're laying your blocks, you need to allow, if you're 8-foot ceilings, and you may need a service void of 4 inches or 100 mil, so you need to be 8'5". So you're coursing a little bit higher, and you may have to lower the pitch of your roof to keep it within your planning of your ridge height and little things like that if your design is not done right.
Yeah. And like, what's the consequence if I miss a hole?
That's tough, isn't it? well, that's leakage, and you don't want it. And leakage is discomfort. Not alone is it costing you money, but it's costing you comfort. As when the window is open, you get the draft.
But you can close the window.
Absolutely, you can close the window and it goes away. And to be honest, you'll never know about it because if you didn't live in a very airtight house, you'll think your house is perfect. But it can always be better. We'd use the analogy that it should be like a fridge. Airtight is the fridge. When you close the door on it, it's airtight.
Can people say they've just built a house and they're listening to this and they're going, shoot, I don't know if my house is actually as good as Cyril is talking about. Can you retrofix these problems in terms of, flaws that might have occurred earlier on in the build?
Yeah, well, the proper procedure is get your house to first fix. All your windows and doors are in. Do an air tightness test at that stage.
Yeah.
And that'll highlight where your problems are. And you can retrofit
what
there.
What does an air tightness test look like?
So it's basically a big fan that's fitted on your door or the window of the house. They close up all the doors and windows, seal up all your, anything needs to be sealed up. We'll say toilet pipes that are not second fixed, shower trays, penetrations up into the attic, your attic door maybe or something like that. Close up everything. The fan is fitted into the front door usually and switched on, and it's sucking air out of the house and it's measuring that volume going out versus the volume that's in the house. So if you have 1,000 cubes in the house and it can suck out 1,500, 500 leakage.
Yeah.
So that's an air
tightness
test.
And can people do that test after they've,
You should do it again when you're finished. You should be doing it twice.
Okay,
First fix and final handover. Yeah.
And what happens if the final handover they find problems?
Yeah, that's it should improve, not disimprove, between first test and second. So you got a problem, somebody's done something didn't tell you. That's where your policing comes in.
Right. Yeah.
Your foreman that's watching site should have caught that.
Yeah. It's interesting when you talk about like the quality control throughout the whole build, and that's something that a self builder really has to consider, whereas if you had somebody like yourself, a builder on board, that there were a lot of kind of a peace of mind, I suppose, that a lot of that would be kind of
They're holding that baby for you. You can go off to work and do your every other day job without worrying about that. It's not something that as I said, that you wake up in the morning and say we're going to be airtight today.
Yeah,
it goes on for weeks during the build.
So fast forward, you've done it, you've got passive. What does actual certified passive mean? What does that mean?
Okay, so everything is done. Our wall U values and our floor U values, we have to produce. You have to do this now anyway with BCAR, but all them pieces of paperwork, your DOPs, your CEs for your insulation, your U value calculations, your air tightness test, your thermal bridge calculations, all that's filed, photographs of the building during construction, your plans, elevations, everything is sent to a third party for independent certification, and he goes through the whole lot of scrutiny. We have to give a declaration saying, yes, we did fit this new value. There may or may not be an inspection, and they double check the calculation and say yay or nay, and they're usually very, very pessimistic with their numbers. So to get passive house certification is it's onerous enough. It won't be given out in 5 minutes.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah.
Okay, so the last thing I want to ask you, Cyril, is what would be your one tip or your one piece of advice you would give to somebody about to start building a house? Let's just assume that this person is a self-builder and not going with a builder, and then we might get your builder piece of advice afterwards. But from a self-builder perspective, they're just about to start, say they've put in for planning or whatever, what would be your one top tip? Cyril from Mannion Build, what's your top tip?
Good design. It's all about design. If you have bad design, you've nothing, because you're looking at it forever. Good design, clever design, good architect, never be beaten. It's simple as that.
Yeah, I think that could go the same for even those going with a builder, talking about design.
Exactly. Design.
Cyril, thank you so much. I really, really, really appreciate your time, and I'm sorry this took so long to bloody get going.
Ah, not at all, no.
Come here, if somebody wants to get in touch with you, or somebody's thinking about building a house and they want to get in touch with you, where's the best place to find you?
Yeah, manionbuild.ie, and drop us an email or drop us a call, no problem.
Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. If you're enjoying the podcast, do let us know. You can find us on Instagram at getinourhome. And as I mentioned at the start of the podcast, I've just set up Get In Our Home with the aim of helping people that are on their own home building journey. As we're only new, I would really, really appreciate it if you could literally just take 1 minute of your time and leave us a review on whatever platform you're listening to this on. And if you click subscribe, you'll receive a notification when we release our next episode. These will cost you absolutely nothing and just help us to keep going with the content. Thanks so much for all the support, and wishing you all a very safe and sound 2022.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.